Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I had a lizard. I named him Toe Jam because he had big toes.
You punched a goose.
That was entrapment. You were there deliberately luring the goose towards you.
You know, tandems, I've always said, are relationship magnifiers.
I could do it with a new husband.
Hi, everyone. It's Mark here. Now, just before we start this week's episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Oladance. If you're looking for earbuds while riding, Oladance wearable stereo are the ones you need. The unique open ear design of Oladance allows you to listen to your favourite music when riding, yet still hear your surroundings to keep you safe. Now, what interested me is that unlike bone conduction headphones, their open ear design and multi-support design means your ears will never get tired or fatigued, even after 2 hours or more of listening. They also don't interfere with your helmet and glasses when you're putting on all your gear. Plus, the dynamic driver the earbuds use is 3 times bigger than most headphones, which allows them to deliver superior sound. The 16 hours long-lasting battery can last for your whole day. Just visit oladance.com/STW and use the code STW30 to save 20% on your purchase. That's oladance.com, oladance.com/STW and the code STW30. Get yours now.
Hello and welcome to this week's Single Track World podcast. I'm Hannah Dobson and here today we have...
Amanda. I'm not really good at this. Do I need to say my surname?
Well, it depends if you want to be like Jesus and share or not.
I lisp when I say my surname. Amanda Wishart.
There we go. Best intro. And...
And Chips Chippendale, editor-at-large, currently in the in-office studio. I'm in the office for a change, and I'm in the special studio that we have set up here, which is basically the changing room, because it's the quietest room we have. So I'm here with the damp towels and the wet shoes of the single-track office.
Luckily, it being a Monday, it's not too fetid in there. Okay, so let's see, where shall we start? Shall we start further back in time with last week where I was? Chips is doing like hand movements. I was off on a bike launch that I'm still not going to talk about, but Chips and Amanda have also been to this same location, so Massa Marittima in Tuscany in northern Italy. So when I went, it rained fairly epically. How was it for you two?
When did I go?
You went.
It was when COVID.
You escaped. COVID, you had to get into a running van and non-stop drive until the Channel Tunnel.
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe that was
February
a shorter experience.
2019. It was dry. I remember it was dry because I had a lizard in my room. That doesn't mean it was dry because of the lizard, but that's...
Lizards, those well-known water sucker uppers.
Coming back to me as we talk. Yes, it was dry. I had a lizard. I named him Toe Jam because he had big toes, like suckers on the wall.
Oh, was it a gecko?
A gecko, that's it.
Ah.
Oh, God.
Right.
Why did you invite me today?
Because everyone needs cheering up on a day like today. That's always good to have some...
Oh, dear. Okay, so did you have a weather lizard, Chips?
I didn't have a lizard, actually. I've been a couple of times, and I went once when it had chucked it down with rain, and I've and been another time when it was dry and dusty and very lovely. But it's
I'm
this...
not listening to...
Oh, dear.
You've broken Hannah. It used to be me that got uncontrollable giggles.
Oh dear.
Now I'm face palm.
That's good. Well, I'll just keep talking if no one else is capable of it.
We're broken.
Wow. Yeah, it's Massa Maritima, which has too many T's in it, I think.
I've spelled it wrong every time I've tried to type it.
Tuscany, about an hour north of Pisa. And it's this lovely collection of, as you expect, kind of Tuscan rolling wooded hills. And it just happens to be a home for a bunch of really enthusiastic mountain bike trail builders and bike riders. And so there's this fab network of trails all around the hills. And all of the hotels and hostels and places around all seem to be amazing agriturismo, incredible organic food from just down the road kind of places, and it's a great place and no one's heard of it, and more people
need apparently
to go
there. All the tourists that go there are German or Swiss.
And in fact, the hotel I stayed at, Thomas Frischknecht's house was out the back. He had a holiday house in the garden,
right,
the other side of the vineyard. There was Frischi's house. So it is a great place.
Yeah, I thought it was quite British in lots of ways. Like the trails were, well, I guess a lot of, well, like they are around here, a lot of the trails were like really historic trails that had been there forever. And then the trail builders had gone in and sort of tickled them a bit rather than them being like super sculpted with loads of features and things in. And obviously I had quite British weather.
Yes. Yeah, I've done a feature in the past about riding in, I think, a little further north in Tuscany. And everyone thinks Tuscany is you know, where you go with your open-top sports car and it's all mega expensive. But northern Tuscany is pretty reasonable because it's just an old working landscape. And there's a lot of, I don't know, paper mills and sort of old industry. And there are all these little paths that link up all the villages that then they built the roads between the villages and the paths still exist. And so my guide said, you know, if you ever want to know where all the good trails are, you find a little old lady and ask her, because she will obviously remember going to school from one village to another and using all these old paths. But yeah, there's a fantastic network of trails there and normally great weather.
Well, yeah, and it's other. I completely lost my internal compass. We kept turning left when I thought I'd have to turn right, and stuff.
Right.
It was very strange. Yeah,
is that you or the area?
I'm usually quite good at finding my way. Yeah, I just maybe it was because you were descending for so long. It just made you lose track of time and space. But yeah. Just down and down, 2.5-3 kilometer descents are entirely normal.
Yes.
So maybe you got into a flow state and then you didn't remember what had just happened.
I don't know if it was a flow state. I definitely did a trail that was one of those where it's like playing chess and you're looking at three places ahead so that because you can't just clear the next feature. You've got to clear the next feature and be in the right place for the one after that, which means not necessarily taking the easiest line off the next feature. Yeah. And you can't even stop to think like, oh, I'm having a good time, because then you've used the bit of brain that you needed to plan three features ahead.
Yeah. There you go. Flow state, definite.
I don't think that's flow state. Flow state's where you just go, la, 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 la. That's like enduro think... focus state.
No, I think, well, maybe it's different for everyone. Flow. I think I've only had flow state once, because I got to the end of a trail in the Alps and Rhys turned round and was saying, oh, wow, that was amazing. What did you think of this bit and this bit? And I just looked at him and said, I don't remember any of what I've just ridden. I just had a big smile on my face. It's where the bike takes over, I think.
Yes. And it has to be Thank difficult you. Enough to be challenging, but not too difficult to be terrifying. So you need to be engaged, but competent enough to do it so that you're not kind of terrified.
I actually thought I'd got in a flow state on Tuesday last week on the night ride, but it was actually the 75 km/h wind was just blowing me. So I thought, wow, this is going really well, and then realised, oh, I'm not in control at all.
And just the wind. And have to go home, uphill.
I got nearly blown off my cargo bike in that wind the other day. Like, it caught me sideways as I passed a gap in some houses, and it blew me across the road in a fairly alarming way, which is quite a feat on a cargo bike. They're not
all Yes, I think you can tell that the people who design all these sort of deep section aero rims don't live anywhere with stone walls with gates, because that's instant, straight across the road into oncoming traffic.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was in Tuscany. People can read about that at some point in the future. So people can read about the bikes at some point in the future as well. Chips, you were. On your travels at the London Bike Show, weren't you?
Yes, I've been doing a zipping around the country a fair amount. Yes, I went to London Bike Show at Alexandra Palace, which is a real pain to get to from anywhere, it seems, unless you live in Alexandra
Especially
Palace.
France.
Yes. But even, I was going from Somerset, which in theory is the south, and, you know, everything should be 5 minutes apart in once you're in the south. But it took me three trains to get to London, and then I think three or four trains to get to Alexandra Palace, and then a 10-minute walk up a big hill. So that was a bit of a challenge. Yes, it was sort of on a scale of British bike shows, where there were maybe two big-ish show halls. One was entirely full of e-bikes and sort of like a theatre interview station, and then the other room was what you would normally expect at a British bike show. So there were a lot of, you know, Ice and Distribution were there with Renthal and one of Erin Gwynne's bikes and things. That was pretty fun. Hunt Wheels, Mavic, you know, there was enough to kind of keep you amused, I think. But but I did pay £6.50 for a Scotch egg. Yeah.
And were there like a good selection of pro bikes and things to look at, or have those all been poached by Sea Otter? Because it's kind of clashes.
There was an Erin Gwynne bike, and there were, I think Chris Carl was going to be there on one of the days. And there were some very nice kind of gravel bikes and that kind of stuff. But yeah, in terms of mountain bike things, London bike shows are generally quite sort of poor pickings, because that's not really the focus of most of the people that go to the shows. When we've exhibited in the past the single track at the London Bike Show, we always found that the mountain bikers were super excited to see us, because I think being a mountain biker in London takes quite a lot of dedication, because you have to, you know, leave the city to go anywhere.
And you've just made bad life choices if you're a mountain biker in London. Imagine how much more bike you could afford if you didn't live in London, for starters.
And pay £6.50 for a Scotch egg.
Yeah.
Yes, and whatever it was.
Was it soft inside?
It was.
That's what you paid for.
Is it? Okay. Right.
I don't eat them.
But why? I'm not even a vegan or vegetarian, but I don't eat them. They're just wrong.
I had to describe Scotch eggs to a vegetarian American friend of mine, which was quite a challenge. He was like, okay, so tell me about these Scottish eggs again. I was like, well, you get this egg and you cover it in pork and then breadcrumbs and then you fry it. And he was like, okay, I'll stay vegetarian.
I didn't know it was pork on the outside. I thought it was just bread.
No, it's basically an egg in a sausage. In a spherical sausage of pink meat.
I described them to Kevin, and then when he was over and doing his food tour of British things, he had a Scotch egg. Like the most, it was probably £6.50 as well. It was an artisan Scotch egg from a farmer's market and all of that, with pork that had been hunted wild in the hills or whatever. And he ate it and he was a bit like, don't think I'd do that again. I just don't get it. No.
That money could have gone towards your wedding dress. You could have just got him one from Lidl.
Yeah, well, I did buy a wedding dress that was £6, but it doesn't fit. So the search continues.
Oh, no.
Which would I rather do? Go wedding dress shopping or be forced to eat a Scotch egg? That's quite a choice, yeah. Okay, so Chips has been at the London Bike Show, and there's a big piece on the classified hub on the website that you wrote about that, isn't there?
Yes.
And lots of questions.
Lots of questions, lots of comments. There was like 45 comments the last time I looked. And someone was saying, oh, well, this isn't new. It's been out a couple of years, but this is the first showing of the mountain bike version of the classified hub, which has a stronger hub, and it's all waterproof. And it has mountain bike ratios, but it's effectively a 2-speed hub that then gives your bike 2x12 gears.
Because we've never had that before. Well, not multiple gears.
Yeah, I don't know. We had 2x11. I can't remember if we had 2x12 briefly. No, I don't think so.
I don't think we have had 2x12. No, we had 3x.
Of course, there's duplication, so you only get 16 unique gears out of it. And everyone's been saying, what's the point? Or Sturmey Archer does one for a tenth the price. It weighs a lot more, and you need a cable. And it's heavy and reasonably inefficient. But hey, you could buy 10 of them.
They've made a road version, and that's been out there. And then, you know, they haven't imploded and lost all their money, and they've still made a mountain bike version, which would suggest that it has some merit.
Yeah, surely. I think
they already started making it.
Yeah, how hard can it be? Yes. they have a lot of backers. They have I think there's a couple of road pros have invested in the company, so that's where they're getting their cash from. But it does have a
road pros with money. That seems like a oxymoron.
No, the road scenes are. It's funny, if you do go to a road race, you see how different the scale is in terms of the business. I went to the Tour of Flanders recently, and just seeing the amount of the team trucks and the team cars and the team buses and all the support crew and everything, it's a huge scene, whereas mountain biking is still pretty tin pot, to be fair. Even at a World Cup race, you're still, you know, you've got a little trailer that folds out, and you've got mechanics and stuff, but there's no kind of luxury team coach and a multiple that's it. Well, the bigger teams do have misses, but yeah, the scale is just so different. But then so were the crowds. You know, there was probably a million people lining the course.
So that translates into wages for individual riders, because certainly in the women's pro road field, doesn't translate into much better wages.
I think it is getting there now, finally. And there is more parity in prize money and stuff. I don't think wages yet, but even then, it's still a richer scene being a road pro than a mountain bike pro.
Okay. Oh, well, so those are the people that are investing in this
in the classified hub. Yes. So basically, it's a two-speed hub, and it lets you have effectively. I was talking to Ross about it. It's, if you think of it more like an instant three-gear change. So you ride in what would be the big ring, and you get to a corner, and there's a climb, or there's a tricky set of rocks to navigate. You've got instant shifting into your what would be your small ring, and you can do that. It takes whatever 150 milliseconds, so it's virtually instant, and you're then in a completely different ratio of gears. And we were trying to think of where, you know, is this just the kind of pro racer thing where you'd need that kind of instant gear shifting, and we think yes, probably. Especially because it's quite expensive. But perhaps things like if you're doing on-site enduro racing or on-site trail riding, and you don't know the terrain up ahead of you, you can shift instantly under power. Mm-hmm. Or you can shift when you're not pedaling as well, which is really handy. So you can descend and be in the correct gear for the climb, even if you don't know there's a climb coming.
I wonder if it'll get hooked up with e-bikes in some way, with like that Trek Pro. Oh, it's not Trek, is it? But the Bosch Pro race motor that was mm-hmm. on the Trek, like, yeah, teamed up with that for super fast shifting and super fast racing, or something like that.
And then it'll know where you are on the course and shift for you, and then robots will take over the world.
Well, predictive shifting, we had a thing about that. There was an e-bike out with predictive shifting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what my Uncle Colin's waiting for. He said he's going to get into mountain biking when that's a thing.
Right.
Predictive shifting. Checking in predictive with steering, and then you can close your eyes and be in the flow zone as much as you like.
Predictive weather.
So Amanda, what have you been up to?
I've not been anywhere, and I've really enjoyed it. So I've got a test bike that by the time this podcast is out will be revealed, and it's got me out of the lull I was in of looking out the window and thinking the trails will still be wet, or I might get wet while I'm out and it's not worth it. I've been out in the wind has been bad, it's been raining, it's been cold, and I've just gone out in any weather because I'm enjoying this bike so much. And it's a GT Sensor. It's the ST, so the shorter travel one. It's a 120mm trail bike with... What tyres has it got? It's got a Recon at the back and a Dissector at the front. So I looked at it and I've got bad memories of a Recon race on something.
Haven't we all got bad memories of a Recon?
Well, I think a Recon race must be the...
That's the one that doesn't cast any shadows at knobs. All.
Yeah.
So I looked at it and thought, oh, God, but I'll take it out as is. And it's the perfect tyre combo for this bike. I've been, like, the trails are wet and I've ridden some dry stuff. And I just fit it perfect. I'm having so much fun on it. I've got plenty of traction despite it having quite good pedally tyres. So I've been going further on it. I've not had a bad experience on it. Just having a great
time. Damn it, with faint praise there.
Yeah, it's just got me really excited about riding out the door again. So I had a joint birthday weekend planned at Dovey Bike Park. And I didn't go because I didn't have a car share. And it's quite a long way to go, especially in the vehicle I was left with, and I thought, I don't have the right bike for it. Even though I've not been there, I've looked at videos and thought, you don't want to take a 120mm trail bike there. So I was a bit sore about not going until I just rode out the door, didn't spend any money all weekend and had a great time. And the reason I didn't have a vehicle was because my partner took the van to the Dirty Reaver.
So he had a miserable time.
Oh, yeah. So I mean, me and Hannah have both written columns about the Dirty Reaver. Mine was probably the most negative thing I've ever written and experienced.
But you were hallucinating after an allergic reaction to a bug bite, to be fair.
I know, but I've tried to imagine. So it was really nice weather when I went. It was the year that they did it in September instead of April. Mm. It was lovely weather. It was a really nice group of people. Even if I was on top form, I can't imagine that I would have enjoyed it. It's just the worst day I've had on a bike. Everything looks the same. You can't get to the end of it and then, you know, when you've done a big ride with people and you're like, oh, and that bit here that was, you know, or I loved those corners. It's, what can you say? Do you remember that gravelly, flat corner that you nearly died on? That led into that
trees.
Straight bit of gravel with the same view in the background. So I'm very like negative about it.
This is laps of Kiel de Forest, is it?
Yeah.
It's not laps, it's
just one big loop of Kiel de Forest.
One big loop of identical gravel roads. And, well, that's gravel bike riding, isn't it? That's southern gravel. It's what.
So I am told I'm wrong about it.
That's where you need your aero gravel bike and your shorts with the pockets in.
And your helmet with a little bungee on it.
Well, when I did it, it was rough enough that I think those like roadie gravel bikes that are for Kansas would have been hard work because the gravel's quite big. Although it is that like gravel road that goes on forever in the forest, the lumps of actual gravel are quite chunky.
I'm told by people that enjoy gravel that it is a brilliant event. That's what a gravel race should be. Because, say, there's Granduro that is kind of implied that it's a gravel race, but it's not. Or an event.
Yeah.
I don't know what else there is. There's things that are 50-50 where, you know, there's sort of recovery tarmac in them, but the Dirty Reaver is just dirty for the entirety of it, and there's no signal, so you can't escape. It's a tough day out.
you were questioning why anyone would do it, and I would say that it might be similar in thought to the Strathpuffer, which is a, for people who don't know, 24-hour race in the north of Scotland in the middle of winter. Then there's 17 hours of darkness and it usually rains all the time, apart from when it snows or freezes over. And I've done that. And the only reason for doing it is anything you do for the rest of the year is going to be easier. So you're going to appreciate anything. You're going to love where you live. You're going to... any bike ride is going to be more fun than doing that. So you're going to have more fun in general.
But at the Strathpuffer, you can stop at any point because it's in laps. The Dirty Reaver, there's no escape. But I appreciate that sort of setting your perception of what is the most discomfort you can be in. I mean, I think I did that this year riding across a country. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing's too big. I wouldn't look at a 200-kilometre ride and think, that's far. I'd just think, that's X amount of food required. But... Yeah, there's different ways of setting what's too difficult.
But it's just boring. It's not so much difficult as boring, isn't it?
Maybe it's the mental challenge. It's not a physical. I mean, it's hard, but maybe it's not to set the physical limit. It's to test your mental strength, because if you can push yourself through 200 kilometres of the same gravel where there's no bailout option and there's no way of ringing a taxi, then you're probably capable of anything.
It's a bit like that riding I did in Iceland where you just endlessly pedalled and never stood up and just pedalled.
The wind was constant.
Some more. You definitely need to break that one up into like little sections with a power meter and things. It's a different frame of mind.
I had a friend in the States who was doing one of the epic snow races, like the Arrowhead or whatever it was. So, you know, it's like 2 days of racing and snow. And his training for it included going to a shopping centre and sort of sitting where they have the, you know, the food court and the little fountain with the pennies in, and just sitting there and just facing the wall for 4 hours and just seeing if he could tune everything out and just get his mind to a sort of zen state and just concentrate on staring at a wall.
If I had to be in a shopping centre, that sounds like a pretty good activity to do, to be honest.
That's where me and Hannah would be hiding, in a shopping centre.
Staring at the wall, listening to the fountain.
Okay, but you were saying that I should do it, because I've for somehow conveniently never been around when it's been on.
We just want you to suffer. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I actually think we should all do it next year.
No!
There's a different approach from all of us. Chips, first time, see how you feel about it. I'll try to not have the second worst day I've ever had on a bike.
I could do it with a new husband.
Oh, he'd
love,
he'd love
you for that.
Yeah, would he be downhill bike with Carhartts. Ooh, the chafing.
Yeah, we could see whether the relationship survives the 2 weeks.
You could do it on a tandem.
Oh,
you know, tandems,
totally,
I've always said, are relationship magnifiers.
Oh, that'd be so nice to have company around it. 10 hours of...
Although it wouldn't be good if one of you had an upset stomach.
Well, I think...
Which is quite possible after 10 or 12 hours of gels. No, well, I suppose I might be persuaded to do it again for the story of doing it again with another husband.
With another husband.
Why did you do it?
I did it last time with the other husband. So yeah, could do it with the new husband and introduce the free rider to British gravel riding. It was just an extreme contrast.
Mm.
He does admit that there is gravel in his future somewhere. I'm not supposed to mean that public, though.
I don't know. Would he treat it as a race? Because it's the Dirty
it's
Reaver.
It's definitely not a race.
Not a race.
No, he wouldn't treat it as a race.
No. Is it one
not
of those
a race,
not a race
but people
where
go
goes
in skin
as fast
suits.
As fast as possible?
There's the rush just... to get into the first group in your skin suit with your time trial bars on. And all your fuel in your hydration pack so you don't have to physically move your hand off the bar and eat.
Okay.
Yeah, because you can't eat one-handed on it. That's a real problem. Like, it is bumpy enough that you kind of need both hands on the bars most of
the time.
That's
why I didn't eat. Aside from the fact that I'd been sick and was not in a good way, there was no point where I thought, I'll reach and get that bar. Or I'll lean over and get that banana. I just thought, at some point I'll be able to take my hands off the bar, and that was 200 kilometres in at the end.
Yeah, the year I did it, there were no sandwiches. Like, all the feed stations, there was nothing savoury, apart from one that had boiled potatoes, which I really didn't want a boiled potato.
Boiled potatoes are good.
It was the same when I did it. It was little cupcake... What do you call them? The little cases that you make cupcakes in.
Cupcake case.
It was those with like four Haribos in.
Oh, right.
Like a pill shot.
Yeah, there was too much sweet stuff anyway. But okay, you have now planted the idea of doing it again. Just
so
a different sort of suffering.
On that kind of stuff, quite often I conversation turns to food, and my favorite topic for that kind of thing is to try to come up with savory energy bar flavors. So we should see if we can come up with what do your savory energy bar flavor of the week be?
Well, see, this is where I think doing this thing with a new husband might be onto something, because he's quite big on trail snacks.
Mm-hmm.
He's quite good at trail snacks and unusual.
Okay,
things.
I have a request then: a Peshwari flavored bar. So it's got coconut, raisins, whatever, and it can go with my curry flavored bar.
I think you might regret a curry flavored bar after about 5 hours, when you start burping your curry bar. Though somebody did do a selection of curry flavored kind of nut bars that were mildly curry flavored, and you had to be in the right mood for them.
I've got some taco flavored cereal bars. Taco flavored. They were in the apocalypse shop. They clearly hadn't sold.
Were they taco flavoured when they were in date?
Yeah. My kids have refused to eat them.
Strange.
They just kind of don't taste of anything. They don't really taste like tacos either. No. But they look like they should be sweet and they're not.
I got some free lip balm from a grill company. They made, camping grills. And it was at a show, and they're like, "Here's have some free chapstick." And they had one that was marshmallow flavored chapstick, and then one that was bacon flavored. And it was as horrible as it sounds. Very bacony.
It wasn't just lard scraped up out of a frying pan after you'd fried some bacon and packed it into a tube.
They were laughing when you walked away.
Yes. Oh, someone took one. Wait till he puts that on. So.
Okay. So.
Halloumi. So that would be my energy bar.
Halloumi.
Halloumi energy bars.
Just eat halloumi.
Yeah.
Don't bother with the energy bar. Just have halloumi.
Well, I think, just a bar shape and just with strips of fried halloumi.
That's cheating. Make an energy bar. Slice some halloumi. Yeah. You've not made anything there.
Oh, I'm very sorry. Okay.
I'm all for real food flavor? Things.
Well, I suppose if you go to... Anyone who goes to Peebles will hopefully have been to Forsyth's Bakers and had either a macaroni or a lasagna pie. Or both, yes. And
that's what I did.
It's great. It's like a 1,000-calorie snack. You only need two of those, and that's your daily recommended... intake of.
I like eating marzipan.
No.
I do wish I could eat the pies from Forsyth's. I have bought one of each flavour, but they were to deliver to Chips.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Allergic to 90% of the ingredients in them.
I'm not really into the whole energy bar fake food thing, but you do need to be able to breathe and swallow while eating, and so that does put things like a macaroni pie kind of out of the picture, I think.
Yes, because you'd sort of get it in your mouth and then there'd be a technical section and you'd be trying to ride with both hands on the bars while not aspirating a macaroni pie.
I did once though put a shock block in my mouth while doing a hilly road time trial. And I put it in my mouth at just the wrong point and then nearly suffocated. That was terrible. Yeah.
I didn't know you'd ever done a time trial.
I did. I did a road race, like a three events in 2 days road race with Beata. And we were in the local newspaper afterwards. I don't think we mentioned that. I think Beata was with me. We got dropped by the safety car before the race had actually started in one of the rounds. Yeah.
Yes. The three-peak cyclocross race is similar to that in that it says that the start is neutralized for the first 5 miles, and having spoken to the guy that drove the car, he said, "Oh no, I just go the speed of the fastest riders."
Yeah, and it was really fast.
So yes,
I think I caught up with them because there was a car accident. It was quite fortunate that there'd been an accident. The road was closed, so I caught up with them all. Yeah. And then somebody got kicked off their bike by a horse as well. That was fairly dramatic too. It's put me in fear of horses while on bikes.
Yes.
I think Reese was in that race. That can't have happened to more than one person.
I think it was a women's race, so I don't think Reese was in it.
Oh.
It was a women's only one.
That has happened more than once then.
So do fear the horse. Oh, yeah. Anyway,
I think horses are well worth treating with respect. And horses, like if horses had been invented like today, and someone said, right, I've invented this thing. It's like, it weighs a ton and it's kind of this big and it's got, you know, it can do stuff that it's told occasionally, and sometimes it does stuff that it wants to do anyway, and you don't want it standing on your foot. You know, how about we let them on the roads and let them on the trails? And people go, you what? but fortunately, horses, we as mountain bikers, we've managed to benefit greatly from their organisedness and lobbying for trails. So well worth treating with kindness and respect. And
anyway,
fear.
To segue back from all of that to the website, there is a, if you want to talk about the Dirty Reaver, there's a big long forum thread to join and chat about that. Chips has got a classified article on the website.
Classified
as well.
Story, if you want to complain about the price and say that you could buy 10 Sturmey Archer 2-speed hubs for that, then you go ahead. You'll be in good company.
And there's nothing on the website for my stuff because it's all secret, or it'll be in the magazine. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, look forward to revealing that.
Yes. Oh, God, I've got a lot of things to write.
So end of this week, I'm going to be riding across Wales. I'm doing the 3-day Transcambrian route from Knighton to Macunthlough. So that's me for the weekend. What's everyone else doing?
I'm going to Tweedlaw.
Yay!
Oh. Sorry, I was distracted then. I was just converting watts to horsepower.
Oh, my God. You've changed.
It's curious.
And how many watts do you have to put out to be one horse?
So my threshold is 0.3 of a horse, which is a Shetland, I reckon.
Nice.
What were we talking about? I was distracted. I'm going to Tweedlaw. That's what I'm doing. I'm not racing now because I don't race. I'm gonna. One of my friends is seeded, so I'm gonna go and heckle him and support everyone else.
Very good. Give him all my regards. It's a fun event.
I think I'm tidying my house. It's really boring.
Cool.
But yeah, I can't go anywhere significant because I am vehicle-less. Having sold my old one to a very enthusiastic mechanic yesterday. So yeah, I guess I have to do wedding dress shopping.
And
tidying my house.
If you don't have transport but you do have a bike, I find it's fun to get a train quite far away and then ride back because you have to make it back.
Yeah, I don't think my kids would appreciate being towed along on such an adventure. That might not go down too well. Yeah, so I also have to entertain my kids this weekend. Yeah, I'm going to go and ride a bike at some point though, because I am now allowed to ride a bike again, and riding bikes is great.
Brilliant.
I might go for a run.
No, don't push it.
Okay, well, so what before we go, by the time this podcast goes out, there will be a survey on the website that is being done by a British guy called Rupert, and it's in conjunction with IMBA, but it's a specific mountain bikers of the UK survey, and they're looking to get the perspectives on trails and what trails we ride and how we experience nature as we do so, and that kind of thing. And it looks like quite a good piece of work, so head to the website.
That'd be interesting, because IMBA has never really understood the UK, as far as I can tell. So it's about time it did. There was an IMBA UK chapter And their one achievement was actually designing the Transcambrian route, which I'm riding this weekend, by amazing coincidence.
Huh, look at that. Yes.
But they didn't really know what else to do because they were like, oh, you've already got trail access. And, right. I think they helped design some very dull trails in a Welsh forest as well. Because it was all about, yes, all about, no, we don't want tight switchbacks and we don't want people, you know, using their brakes. And so you have to do these like massive uphill switchbacks so that you don't have to brake. But they were a bit dull to ride. Anyway.
Well, go to the website. Tell them, fill in the survey. Website. Yes, it'll be up by the time this goes out.
Okay, that would be pretty good. I think they need to know.
Okay, well, thank you everybody for listening to this week's waffle.
Can you hear the geese?
I can hear the geese. That's a geese outro. Amanda has such a love-hate relationship with these geese.
I love these two out my window. I hate the one at the Summit pub that attacked me.
But you don't like that one out your window.
Can we include the sound of me getting attacked by a goose?
I'm sure we can splice it in.
We'll put it in here, yeah.
Punched not a goose.
Chips, have you not seen? I'll send you the video.
Okay.
I know I've been attacked by this goose before, so I had my camera rolling, thinking he'll probably go for me again, and he did.
You were luring the goose.
I wasn't. I was running past it, but he thinks that I'm after his eggs.
That was entrapment. You were there deliberately luring the goose towards you by running past it with a camera.
It's exactly 5 kilometres away from my house, so it's at the turning point if I'm running 10 kilometres. So in his mind, I've gone past, I've spotted his nest, I've thought, I'll have that, so I've turned around to get it, and that's why he goes for me. I worked it out, so I'm just not running that far anymore.
Okay. Amanda is also available for goose psychoanalysis.
And keen for someone to help me build a bridge for the ones outside my window.
I'm keen for someone to do some psychoanalysis on Amanda. Why do you need a goose bridge?
The ones, Clarence and Alabama, my geese that have lived outside my window for a while.
Sorry, hang on. Clarence and Alabama.
Those are the geese.
Good goose names.
And so their nest is in like a little tucked away next to the bridge, and they can just about get to the nest. So when the goslings hatch, they can't get back in the nest and they drown every year. Geese are terrible parents. They either lose them, just forget that they've got children, or they make it so the children can't get home in this case. So I was thinking if I fashion a bridge, then they can get back in.
Oh, see, I thought you were talking about an emotional bridge between you and parents in Alabama. But you mean an actual real bridge.
Actual physical bridge for the children to get back in.
Wow.
Because I'm sick of every year. And they're getting more aggressive because every year they just go, oh, where have my children gone? We'll try again next year. So I think they're getting more aggressive because they've been failing to keep the litter alive. Is it a litter?
Probably not.
Brood? Brood, I think.
Brood. For 3 years in a row now, they've all died. So.
Okay.
Okay. So get crafting. Any small bridge builders out there, you can contact Amanda at goosepuncher at singletrackworld.
Okay. I've got to make this podcast stop or I'm not going to be able to breathe anymore.
It was self-defense.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody. Until next time.
Watch out for geese and horses. We'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.